Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk.
Welcome into Coffee Break. I'm Troy Shockley. I do appreciate you joining us today. And just a note, you can now catch our show on your schedule. It's the Coffee Break Podcast. We're at coffeebreak959.podbean.com. There's a link at the top of our website, easier to remember, kcap.com. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, TuneIn. We're all over out there. And if you're joining us now, you can... You don't have to wait. You can listen to us live. I didn't know what I wanted to say there, but I do want to say that John Morford is joining us to kick off the show. He's the state president of the Montana State Elks Association. John, thanks for taking some time to join us today.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, you were telling me the other day when we were chatting, you've got some background years past in broadcasting. Maybe you can take over this thing for me because I'm already struggling.
Oh, no, I'm pretty rusty. That goes back to college and in my early 20s. I did a little bit after college myself, so. But about the only thing I do in that area is I announce basketball games and basketball tournaments and do a little football for some of the local high schools where I live. So.
Well, I'll keep you on speed dial just in case.
All right, sounds good.
Can you explain instead sort of just what the Montana State Elks Association is? People have, I know, heard of it, but maybe they don't really know actually who the Elks are and what they do.
Well, the Montana State Elks Association is basically kind of the way how I explain it to people that don't know much about the Elks is we're kind of the middleman between the Grand Lodge and our local lodges in our state. And so the Montana State Elks Association, we have state committees and state officers that, oversee the lodges in the state to make sure that they're carrying out the charitable programs that are outlined by the Grand Lodge. And so we have state committees that for a specific type of charity that we're working on, like for the hoop shoot or for most valuable student scholarships. So we have state committees that work with the lodges to make sure that they're carrying out those charitable works and to offer guidance and assistance to if they have any questions.
Well, and I did some digging. I found out officially, if we want to get the whole thing, it's the Benevolent and Protective Order of the Elks of the United States of America, officially established February 16th, 1868. This thing's been, it's been around for a while.
Yeah, exactly. We just celebrated our 150th year of existence. Like you said, it was established in about mid-1800s. The Helena Elks Lodge was the mother lodge in the state of Montana, and they just celebrated their 128th year in existence in Helena. So if you kind of can imagine what life was like in the 1800s, and they've been around the Helena area carrying out charitable work since then.
Yeah, I mean, it is a service organization, and there's scholarships made available. There's lots of really good things done through the Elks, aren't there?
Yeah, that's, one thing that I've really enjoyed about being a member and doing the charitable work is that it's such a broad spectrum of different types of charitable work. If we were to generally categorize what we are focused on, first and foremost, we are dedicated to our veterans of our country. We have a motto that wherever there's a veteran, the Elks will never forget them. And our other two big umbrella that we focus on are the youth in our community. So, for example, like the Elks Hoop Shoot Contest, it's the National Free Throw Contest. And in fact, we have a couple winners recently for the district coming representing the Helena Elks Lodge mm-hmm. to the state finals in February. But that's a National Free Throw Contest where all of our national winners have their names permanently inscribed in the Basketball Hall of Fame. Last year, Montana had two national champions from representing Livingston Lodge. They were two young ladies from Big Timber. Also, the Most Valuable Student Scholarship. It's a national contest where the graduating seniors submit their applications into the local Elks Lodge, and then it goes on to the state and to the national, to where we have the national winners, both boys and girls, each first place gets $50,000, and second place gets $40,000, and so on and so forth. So last 2 years ago, we had a young man from Glacier High School win the National Most Valuable Student Scholarship of $50,000. And so those are some of the things. Another good example of our youth programs is we were the first organization to ever introduce a drug awareness program, and it's still in existence. You know, you've seen MAD rise and fall, and DARE is kind of on its way out, but the Elks is still here. We were the first one that started it in under the Reagan administration when they were doing the fight against the drugs in America, and the Elks were the first to step up to the plate. And to this day, we're the only one that's still endorsed by the DEA. We're partners in the DEA. And so Elks Lodges, they have a drug awareness committee that goes around and does different type of works. They partner up with local law enforcement, do drug take-back days where they, you know, people turn in their old prescription drugs, and then the DEA takes it to an incinerator and dispenses it. Bozeman did one not too long ago where they confiscated over 80,000 pounds of confiscated drugs in one day in different locations throughout their jurisdiction of their lodge. So those are small samples. And, of course, our veterans, you know, if you went to our website and watched some of the videos, the Elks were really part of American history when it comes to work for veterans. The VA hospital was originally started by the Elks during World War I, I think it was, as wounded soldiers were leaving the battlefield and getting ready to come home. The Elks actually traveled out to Europe and set up temporary camps to get them ready to travel back home. And then it wasn't long after that that the military took over that responsibility. So then we set up basically what is known today as the VA hospital. So when they came back from war, they came to hospitals that were run by Elks members to help them transition back from the battlefield to home. And then, of course, later on that became the VA hospital. The VA bill was another created by the Elks. We were the first ones to ever offer scholarship to veterans that wanted to go to college, and then later on it became the VA bill. So we have a lot of part of American history that Americans really don't understand. Flag Day is another example. That was presented to Congress by the Benevolent Protective Order of Elks from one of our Grand Lodge sessions, and it stalled out in Congress, of course, but when Harry Truman became a member, or became president, he was already a member of the Elks, and that was one of the first things he pushed through Congress, and that's why we have Flag Day on June 14th, was because of the Elks. And so, and we serve our communities in many other different capacities, and what I really like about the Elks is that it's not focused on one area, like just veterans or just youth. We serve our communities in many other different fashions, and so, you know, members of the Elks Lodges that are out in their community might hear of some type of need in their community, and they vote on it if they want to support it, and then they support it, whether if it's raising money for it or actually getting their hands dirty in on that type of project. And, you know, like in my hometown lodge, which is Livingston, we helped build the first skateboard park. Not only did we throw money at it, but we had members that were actually involved building it. And, of course, that's about 15 years old, and we're actually going through the second phase of that skateboard park. You know, we support, you know, so many different things, like food baskets at Christmas or Thanksgiving, and it just goes on and on. So that's what I like about it. It's whatever you have an interest in, the Elks has some type of program to support it, or you can just create your own within your lodge. Yeah.
We're talking today with John Morford. He's the state president of the Montana State Elks Association, and you've got quite a few lodges here in Montana. I mean, cities from Plentywood to Dillon, as we've mentioned, the chapter here in Helena as well, but it's in a little bit of trouble. It's in a gray area. It doesn't even, they sold their building, so there's no building right now. In a situation, it sounds like, where membership kind of lagged and recruitment got maybe a little lax and members getting older, and a confluence of a lot of events that created a bit of a perfect storm. So now we're going to have an open house for the Elks here in Helena, and we've got a couple minutes left. I don't want to run out of time to talk about that. So, John, this is going to be on Thursday. What are the details here?
Yeah, it's going to be on Thursday. It begins at 4 o'clock in the evening, runs till, you know, around 8 o'clock. Could go a little bit over that. And our goal, it'll be at the Wingate, which from what I understand is behind Perkins in Helena. And we have members from the Helena Elks as well as myself and other Elks from across the state that are coming there to basically welcome people to come in. They have questions about the Elks and to educate them what we're about and hopefully spark some interest in becoming a member of the Helena Elks Lodge.
So who is this for? I mean, ultimately, who do you want? Who do you hope shows up on Thursday?
Whoever's interested in getting involved in a great charitable organization and help out their community in some fashion, whether it's serving a veterans focus or helping the kids in your community, whether if it's something that you're interested in, like fighting against the war on drugs and drinking and driving for kids. You know, we've got a big problem with teenage suicide going on across our state, and so that's our new focus on our youth activities committee. And it might even be something that you have an interest in helping out veterans in your area. And so we're looking for people that would like to get their hands dirty and help out their community in a really unique fashion. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it's important because we need to make sure that we get some membership bumped up here in Helena in order for this group to stay active and to continue. So this exactly. Coming up on Thursday, before I let you go, John, give us the nuts and bolts again. It's going to be Thursday. Give us the whens and the wheres, and I guess where people maybe can call or visit on the web to find out more information.
Yeah, again, it's at the Wingate up by the airport this Thursday from 4 to 8 p.m., and everybody's welcome. And if you have any questions, anyone's welcome to give me a call at area code 406-581-4182.
All right, John Morford, state president of the Montana State Elks Association, their event coming up on Thursday. John, thanks for taking some time this morning.
Hey, I appreciate the phone call, and hopefully we see a lot of people there on Thursday.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you will. We've got a good crowd, and I know you're going to get some folks out there. Stick around. We've got more Coffee Break coming up after this. I just wanted to step away from the show for a few seconds to tell you that if you miss an episode, you can always catch up. We're on iTunes, so find our show there or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Local and area events, city, state, and national officials, your neighbors doing incredible things. We talk to them all on Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk. Coffee Break is sponsored by Kelly DeWolf, your reverse mortgage funding specialist at 1422 Cedar Street, Helena. Kelly DeWolf, reverse mortgage specialist. For details, contact him at kellydewolf@reversefunding.com. Now, back to our show. Welcome back into Coffee Break. Troy Shockley, thanks for sticking with us today. Finishing out this show is David Konopke. He's the superintendent of Streets, Traffic, and Fleet Services with Helena Public Works. David, thanks for coming in today.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right. I'm just glad I got your last name right.
It is a challenge sometimes.
Yeah, you know, and I've had enough caffeine. I think I'm ready to go now. You're the superintendent of Streets, Traffic, and Fleet Services. It's a mouthful. I guess give us just a general idea. What does that mean? What does the day-to-day look like for you?
For our street divisions, that's the operators that maintain our roadways. So during the wintertime, doing the snow plowing and sanding. During the spring and fall, that's when we're sweeping the streets for the sand that we put down over the winter and the leaves that fell in the fall. And then during the summer, people that are doing the fixing the potholes, doing the milling and overlays for, trying to extend the longevity of our roads. Mm-hmm. The traffic division is, we maintain the traffic signals for the city of Helena that we have and some of the states. We also, all the signs and the striping on the roadways are maintained by the traffic division. So Fleet Services is basically the shop that will maintain the vehicles and the equipment of the entire city.
Okay. So, man, you've got a very busy day every day, it sounds like, and every season has a new challenge. This season, what it's supposed to be centering around snow and snow removal. We haven't seen any yet. I don't know what you did with it. You got rid of it really effectively is what you've done.
It's been a pretty mild winter so far, but we are equipped up and have our plows ready and our other apparatus ready to go in the event of a snowstorm.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine it's going to last the whole time. And do you have like a pool going on down there? You got like the calendar and you guys are waiting for that first big snowstorm?
I wouldn't say we have a pool, but we are waiting for the next snowstorm. And like I said, we just want to get out ahead of the snow, you know, and make sure that the roads are as clear as possible, as quickly as possible.
Yeah, a little bit of a whiplash for your crew, I'm guessing, because last year was horrible. And for that reason, we made some changes to the snow removal process and the routes. A big focus, I know, for you is, as you said, working to get ahead of that storm. I know at my house I like to try to put off that shoveling. My wife says, go out there and shovel. I said, well, no, it's still snowing. Let's wait until, because then you finish the driveway and turn around, and there's half an inch of snow on it again. That doesn't work for you guys, because then you're just spinning circles, right? You got to get out there in the middle of it before it turns into ice.
Right. You know, when the roadways get driven on, that packs the snow down and it creates ice. So what our focus is this year is to preload the front end of the storm so that where our plows are out there, we're getting the sand out at the intersections and just trying to get ahead of it so we don't have a lot of icing out there.
Because once it ices, those blades, I mean, you can't do anything once it turns to ice, right? I mean, people just think, oh, they got big blades on the front of their trucks. They can just still get the snow up. But once it ices up, you can't do a whole lot or you chew up the road, right?
Well, we can bring in motor graders to peel up the snow, but that is an expense. And, it's resources that we don't have a lot of. So in order to get the whole town, you know, we'll have to implement contracted services if that event occurs again.
Okay. So it's just, you know, the best way is just get out early and keep fighting through the storm is how it should work.
Yeah, that's correct.
So you have some new vehicles that'll help with that too. I know we had the city manager in a little bit ago. He said you got a couple of new plows in the fleet, right?
Yeah, we purchased in the last year a couple of used quote unquote mountain plows. They're a little bit shorter in length, and they're four wheel drive or all wheel drive plows that help us get up into those hilly areas and those tight turnarounds a little bit easier. And they have a little different sanding technique. They have the sander midships instead of at the back end of the truck. So we're kind of piloting a couple new pieces of equipment this year also to see as we move forward in the next years what we want to make changes into our snow plowing fleet.
Okay. We're chatting this morning with David Konopke. He is, he's the man in charge of getting rid of the snow on your roads when it shows up. And I imagine it's got to be tough to get in some of those streets. You mentioned, you know, getting those steeper streets. Not only are they steep, a lot of them they're very narrow, and they're also residential. So they're very narrow streets on a steep grade that have cars parked all along them. That's presented a pretty big problem for your guys, right? I mean, there's some streets I imagine those standard trucks can't even get down.
That's correct. You know, we try to make sure that when we're plowing, we stay away from personal vehicles or things parked on the roadway so that it doesn't get damaged by the snow that's being plowed up. So we typically stay about 3 feet away from any object like that. Well, as you alluded to, those streets are narrow already, and then by giving that buffer 3 feet off of these vehicles, that street becomes extremely narrow at that point.
Yeah. Well, and something approved by the commission, I guess, related to that, as you were telling me now, RVs, boats, trailers, anything like that parked along the road, regardless of whether or not they're on the emergency snow route, which we'll talk about, they can be towed now, right, during a certain period of time on the calendar.
Yes. In the last October, or this past October, the city commission passed an ordinance that all parked vehicles, RVs, trailers, boats, stored items on the public right-of-way, that's, you know, property line, or with can be towed between November 1st and April 15th.
Okay. And that's just, I mean, that's part of the reason, right, is to allow you guys to actually get out there and move that snow.
Right. These stored items, you know, I think everybody's seen them in the past where during these big snow events, the berms get up and then they make the roadway narrow and it becomes a safety issue. So the commission voted to get those vehicles removed off the streets so that we can increase the width of the street by, you know, not allowing those vehicles on the roadway.
Right. So when you get a notice of snow, I expect that comes from the National Weather Service. Give us a little a peek behind the curtain. I mean, what happens? What's the process when they say, hey, later this week there's a snowstorm coming in?
So what we've done differently this year is when NOAA issues a storm warning or an alert or whatever that has a 2 inches or more snow expected, our operators are automatically basically put on notice that they could be on 12-hour shifts depending on the storm event. In the case of a big storm event, they would know that when they came in, when that storm event that day, that they would be on 12-hour shifts, and then we would call in extra drivers to cover those that other 12-hour shift so that we can get the town cleared as quickly as possible.
And then it doesn't show up, and you just say, sorry, guys, stand down.
Correct. We've had a couple of those storm events already this year where, you know, it's predicted 2 to 4 inches or 2 to 3 inches, and, you know, it just never came. But our guys were there. They were ready to go and right. Ready to get out there once it started snowing.
David Konopke, our guest this morning. He's the superintendent of streets, traffic, and fleet services with Helena Public Works. And we mentioned it, but those emergency snow routes, they've seen some changes after last year. Can you explain to folks, I guess initially, what is an emergency snow route? The, people have probably seen the signs, but maybe don't even know exactly what that means.
So an emergency snow route is basically those routes connecting critical facilities. So the fire departments, the police department, the hospital, these in a very critical event where the town is basically shut down, what routes do we need open to get emergency services around? So those emergency snow routes, which are, you know, redesignated this year after we revised them last year, now are in effect. We went from 50 miles of snow routes last year compared to 10 miles this year.
Yeah, so it's shrunk down. Explain to people what the gain is there, because obviously it's easier to keep 10 miles clear than it is 50, but just on the surface, people might go, okay, you got those 10 miles clear, but now we've got 40 miles of road that aren't being plowed. How is that better?
So the thought process behind that is we can get to those 10 miles quickly, and then there's also a policy in the city that if 2 inches of snow falls on an emergency snow route, that route has to get replowed. So in the event of a heavy snowfall, we can come back and get to those 10 miles a lot quicker. But what that 10 miles does for us is we can get out into peripheral streets, the neighborhoods, a lot faster than we would if we were doing the 50 miles and then continuing to go around after these snow events.
Right. So you're not – it's a net gain because you're not hemmed into that larger route. You can actually get out into some of these residential areas and clear some of the snow before you have to head back.
Yeah, it allows our operators a little bit more flexibility because, as everyone knows in Helena, sometimes the Upper West or the Upper East Side gets a heavier snow event than, say, the Valley. So it allows our operators a little bit of flexibility to hit those emergency snow routes and then go off into these other streets. Now, there was some concern that, you know, I came off an emergency snow route. Now, the street is not as important. Well, what we did is we went from emergency snow routes and then everything else to emergency snow routes, priority one, priority two, and priority threes. So in the grand scheme of things, you're probably not going to see a lot of difference because a lot of those emergency snow routes became priority one routes, which are getting done right after the emergency right. snow routes. So it just allows a little bit more flexibility for our operators to get out in that periphery areas.
And before we run out of time, we got about 2.5 minutes or so left. And one thing probably important to point out, folks that live along those routes, I'm sure they've already, you've put out notices and you've been out there, you've let people know, but they can't park their cars on those snow routes during certain hours of the day when we've got 2 inches of snow is that marker, right?
That's correct. It was a 2-inch storm forecasted by NOAA. Obviously, if that storm pops and fizzles, you know, you can park your car there. But if we're receiving active snowfall and there's plowable snow there, you know, we are requesting that people move their cars so we can get those areas plowed and make it easier for everyone.
And for a lot of them, it's typically from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. So hopefully if you're at work, you're not going to see any big problem. You just are going to have a clear road when you show back home.
That's correct. We tried to do it between 8 and 5 when most people would be at work so that we could get those plowed, and then when we return home, they would be clear. There are some areas, around the hospital, the Capitol, and Carroll College where those areas are parked in during the day, so those areas are no parking between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m.
And if people want to get on and find out what the emergency snow route is, because it's pretty tough for, I could ask you to give us the streets and you could do it, but people wouldn't be able to picture it in their head. That's on the city's website, right?
That's correct. It's under the city of Helena, departments and public works, and then go to streets, and then under there, there's snow and ice control plan.
Okay.
Has all the maps and the ordinances and some frequently asked questions.
Perfect. We've got about a minute left, David. I want to ask you, past the nuts and bolts of the plan, past the emergency route itself, what can the public do to help you and your guys do your job and do it better, more effectively?
Well, I think just working together, when they recognize that we're having snowfall and it's plowable, you know, try to move your vehicles off the roadways, these stored vehicles, let's get those off the roadway so we can open up these roadways a little bit more. It's more about working together and trying to make life easier for both our operators and the public, so getting around instead of having the hassle of snow berms and narrow roadways.
And I expect to give those guys the room they need to do their job when they're out there driving too, right?
Yeah, give them, you know, stay back adequate distance so that, you know, that's a big truck with a big plow in front of it, and we prefer that we don't have any accidents. And
right. David Konopke with Helena Public Works, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
I'm Troy Shockley, and that's it for Coffee Break today. Be sure to check us out on iTunes. Head on over. Give us a review there. That's always much appreciated. Or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Coffee Break, brought to you by News Radio 95 KCAP and sponsored by Kelly DeWolf, your reverse mortgage funding specialist at 1422 Cedar Street, Helena. Kelly DeWolf, reverse mortgage funding specialist. Kelly DeWolf at reversefunding.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here tomorrow.